This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Michael Hobbs makes a convincing argument that when you look under the hood of cancel culture, the term disintegrates into a flurry of disparate examples. Among the hodgepodge of endorsements lost and Substacks made and egos bruised, is there any dispositive evidence that cancel culture really exists? At the moment, it depends on who you ask. Eric Smith thinks it does. An associate professor of rhetoric and composition at the York College of Pennsylvania, he believes cancel culture does describe a pervasive, dangerous cultural phenomenon. And it describes what happened to him.
Well, the keynote address at the 2019 Conference on College Composition and Communication was all about teaching standard English to students of color and the inherent racism therein. So I criticized it on a listserv, saying this isn't really getting us anywhere. And here's the thing. I'm not the biggest, you know, champion of standard English. It's not an egregious sin to end a sentence in a preposition anymore. That is a thing of the past. But I am a big fan of giving students the tools that they will need in civic and professional context. And I think this idea that doing so is inherently racist is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And as a Black person, it angers me. I've been accused of trying to placate white people. I'm trying to have Black students be as empowered as possible and not so fragile that they feel oppressed because they have to write isn't instead of ain't.
I read your response, and it seemed a perfectly reasonable dissent. I also read one of the responses that was very stinging and other people agreeing with that response. And then I read a few people saying, now, wait a minute here, we can have discussion. And rather than just call it out, shouldn't there be a better formulated response to your response? How many people actually wrote?
Let's say a dozen.
Okay.
And that doesn't count the storm that was happening simultaneously on Twitter to what I said. There is a lot of misrepresentation, if not all lies.
From students and colleagues, or mostly colleagues?
Students and colleagues. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was accused of going after graduate students, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. What happened was I was scrolling through Twitter, as one does, and I saw many people slandering me. I guess it's technically libel. But I said, hey, that's not true. And I tried to defend myself. And that was rendered as mm-hmm. going after graduate students.
Have you gotten into Twitter fights before?
No, not before this one.
Because that is how they go.
Well, here's the thing. I wouldn't have done this if I didn't think I was talking to mature academics. I was certain that we could have a civil and intelligent conversation. And I was wrong. I wasn't talking to academics. I was talking to middle school mean girls.
So earlier in this hour, I spoke to somebody who's very critical of this whole cancel culture idea. And he says cancellation is a word that never really contributes to the conversation. Instead, you could say someone was fired or someone was criticized, that to elevate this to a trend creates a sense of moral panic when there is no cause for one.
I guess if you're somebody like me who studies language and persuasion, it presents differently. It's a phenomenon to me. It's something that is very telling about contemporary America. The idea that if you don't like something, the best tactic is to degrade the person who said it, to not only silence them, but show others this is what happens when you cross us.
Well, what happened to you? What professional consequences did you experience?
At the time of my attempted cancellation, I was writing a book, but it was about the teaching of writing, the meaning behind standardized English. After this incident, however, I realized that I have to write about these trends in academia, about the idea that everything is about power dynamics, the idea that everyone is reduced to being a body and not an individual. And I decided to revamp the book. Mm-hmm. I added chapters. I revised substantially other chapters. I wouldn't recommend doing that with 3 months left to the deadline. That took its toll on my psyche, but it was worth it.
So you didn't lose tenure. You're still able to publish and teach. You've said the experience has made you more outspoken.
Yes.
And created a book that is perhaps more relevant to this moment. You got slammed, but you're functioning in the world, and in some ways, you're participating in the mainstream discussion now.
Yes.
How is that ultimately a bad thing? Especially since the number of teachers and professors and academics who are actually fired because of mobs on social platforms is vanishingly small.
I speak up because I can. What I'm saying is something that many people agree with but aren't able to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not doing this woe is me thing. What I am doing is trying to address what I see as a problem in my field. There was a time in academia, and that time was like 6 years ago, where, you know, if you criticize somebody's work, you're criticizing somebody's work, not that person. That is gone. And when we can't have academic discourse, we are no longer academics.
But even given all of that, what I see is this cancel culture notion, lumping things from criticism to murder into the same basket, and then proclaiming it a threat to the American way of life. That is why I resist this phrase.
I guess if I were to somehow justify the term, I would cite the idea of free speech and people silencing themselves on purpose, right?
But it can be argued that this is the freest time for speech that we've ever had.
Yeah.
So it's just different things that are at this moment particularly explosive.
I would agree with that. My main issue is just the lack of academic discourse. We can't ask questions anymore. It's called trolling now. If you ask a question after a panel presentation at a conference, for example, anything other than some variation of how can I be more like you is seen as threatening. It's not academia anymore. It's more like a church. You can't stand up in church and say, Pastor, I don't agree with your interpretation of John 3:16. That's frowned upon, to say the least. Now academia is like that, becoming like that anyway. I think it's detrimental to the very people it's trying to help, specifically Black and Indigenous people of color. The concept of anti-racist pedagogy is fine. I like that. I think I do it. But when it becomes this infantilization of students of color, I don't like that.
I'm not arguing against agitating for all ideas to be heard. I'm arguing against the notion of a cancel culture. That is the thing that concerns me as somebody who looks at how the national narrative shapes and reshapes itself.
Call it what you want. The label is less important than the actuality of it, what it implies about our ability to communicate as a society. Those are my issues. I'm focused on academia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Eric Smith is an associate professor of rhetoric and composition at the York College of Pennsylvania.